Historical What Ifs. Historical What Ifs.
You know how the tiniest hinge can swing whole centuries. That's why I love doing these counterfactuals with you. And this one, that raft on the Niemen River in July 1807, it's the definition of a palm-sized moment with outsized fallout.
Right. Picture it. A floating salon in the middle of the river, embroidered drapes and all. On one side, Napoleon Bonaparte, who's just bulldozed Western and Central Europe. On the other, the young, unreadable Tsar Alexander I. Two armies glaring from opposite banks, and their chat decides the map.
You always go for the knife's edge, but I get it. For the record, Russia had just been mauled at the Battle of Friedland after that winter bloodbath at Eylau. The usual script says they fold. Instead, we got the Treaty of Tilsit, the Franco-Russian alignment, Prussia cut down to size, and the continental system aimed at Britain.
Unless the script tears in half. If Alexander steps back from that raft and says no, then no Tilsit, and suddenly the Fourth Coalition doesn't really end. The dominoes fall in different directions. Iberia, Central Europe. Maybe no 1812 catastrophe as we know it.
So let's freeze the frame. The meeting sours. Boats drift back to shore. The armies keep eyeballing each other across the river. What's Napoleon's first card? Does he shove across and gamble?
I don't buy that he can. The Grande Armée's won, sure, but it's wrung out. Eylau was a meat grinder. Friedland was decisive but costly. His supply line snakes across Prussia, and pushing straight into Russia in midsummer toward another winter? That's not bravado. That's overreach.
So we get a frozen front on the Niemen as the cold rolls in. A ceasefire that isn't, basically.
Exactly. A sullen, armed pause. And that one change scrambles his rhythm. In our timeline, the peace after Tilsit lets him pivot west. Portugal first, then Spain, to force the blockade on Britain. He only tries that because his east looks quiet.
But here the east is anything but quiet. He can't strip it. He has to park Prime Corps in Poland to watch the Russians and to babysit Prussia, which is the other live grenade. Without Tilsit, that state isn't carved up on paper. It's battered, not erased.
Which means it's a permanent headache in the middle of his roads. He can't ignore it. He's got to garrison it, feed it, police it, bleeding men in wagons the whole time.
Men he historically fed into Spain. The ulcer.
The open wound that never closed. Yes. He hikes through Spain in late 1807 to smash Portugal, then knocks over the Spanish Bourbons in 1808. He does it because he thinks the continent is locked down.
But if it isn't? If he's got... Wait, did you say 50 or 150?
150. About 150,000 tied down in a Polish winter. Big difference. With that kind of commitment, the grand Iberian adventure shrinks. Maybe a probing move via Junot. Not the massive personal intervention. The Spanish ulcer becomes a sore spot. Not sepsis.
That changes London's calculus, too. They'd smell opportunity. Pump gold, muskets, and advisors into Russia and Prussia. Keep that eastern fire hot and let France juggle two fronts years earlier than it expected.
Which ruins his core method. He wins by isolating enemies and knocking them down one at a time. Austria, then Prussia, then a handshake with Russia to box in Britain. Break the Russian handshake and the sequence jams.
And the mystique cracks. His aura is built on clean, emphatic victories. Austerlitz, Jena, Auerstedt. Friedland, he doesn't do stalemate. A simmering border on the Niemen advertises limits.
Austria, especially. You know they were already rearming. In our line, they pounce in 1809 because he's stuck in Spain. Here, they might argue for 1808. His best corps and marshals, think Davout, are frozen in the east. His ally in St. Petersburg is no ally at all, and British subsidies are sloshing around the Danube corridor.
I can hear the pushback in Vienna, though. After 1805, they were flattened, reforms midstream. Lunging a year earlier is bold, maybe too bold.
Is waiting safer? Wait too long and he shakes loose from Poland and comes back with focus. I can imagine voices in the HOHF Berg saying, now or never. Russia's defiant, Prussia is seething, London's paying.
So we get a fifth coalition, a year ahead of schedule, on a different chessboard. He can't just whistle up the whole Grande Armée to the Danube. Some of his sharpest blades, Davout again, are stuck on the Niemen. He has to choose where to be weak.
And that's new for him. Which flank does he let sag? Does he risk Austria pushing toward the Rhine while he holds in Poland? Or yank troops west and invite a Russian-Prussian riposte into his rear?
Either way, he's conceding. He might actually have to bargain with Vienna. Real terms, not dictates. That alone punctures the master of Europe persona.
Meanwhile, London faces a different menu. If the blockade isn't airtight and France is fighting for balance from the Danube to the Niemen, do the British still pour a career's worth of effort into Portugal and Spain? Or do they try something bolder? A major landing in Holland or North Germany while his attention splits?
That's his nightmare. A coalition war of 1813-style weight arriving in 1808 with fewer French reserves and less fear holding the German states in line. The system creaks early.
Because Tilsit was the pin. Pull it, Alexander says no, and the structure slides. Prussia turns sullen and dangerous. Austria sniffs timing. Britain spends where it stings. Spain doesn't swallow the same dose. He can't threaten everyone at once, so his diplomacy loses its teeth.
Which means the consequences aren't just on a battlefield map. The administrative project, the code, the prefix, the tidy ledger lines, needs breathing room to stick. If from 1808 he's firefighting on two or three fronts, those reforms look more like occupation protocols than a continental blueprint.
And nationalism lights faster. Instead of Spain flaring first, you get smaller brush fires everywhere. German towns hedging, Prussian patriots earlier, maybe even Austrian provinces acting like they're already in a people's war. Not a slow burn, a gust that catches every dry field at once.
So Tilsit, in hindsight, is a bright, fragile peak, a solved Rubik's Cube that only stayed solved because nobody touched it for 5 years. Without it, the endgame shows up early and messy.
And here's the twist I keep circling back to. In our world, his 1812 march ends in disaster on Russian snow. In this one, Tsar Alexander I saying no probably prevents that specific catastrophe, but trades it for a broader, earlier continental pileup. No hero's exit, just a different path to the same cliff.
Which is the uncomfortable lesson, isn't it? One refusal on a river raft reshuffles who bleeds when, not whether anyone does. I keep thinking, if Bonaparte wakes up in a different mood, or Alexander gets a different letter that morning, the 19th century tilts. Congress in Vienna, Prussia's rise, Britain's timing, all of it.
And you're about to say, contingency is the quiet tyrant of history.
I was about to say exactly that. Fine, you know my tells. Still true, though.
It is. And it all starts with a raft on the Niemen and one word that wasn't yes.